Thank you, Lord. So are we. We're seated with him. This is Sunday morning, October 7, 2018. Thank you, Lord. I was thinking this morning about houses, like new houses and old houses. And the Lord was giving me an analogy about some people are younger, some people are older. And the Lord was saying, it doesn't really matter if you're an old house or if you're a new house. The Lord is the repairer. He's called the repairer of the breach, the repairer of broken walls that have been broken down. I mean, especially when you think about, we went to a 50th anniversary deal yesterday, and the son of the woman, he's probably looking at 50. He's about 47, 40, fixed to be 48, something like that. I'm thinking, man, you think you can't call him a young man anymore. It's like, he's middle-aged. I'm thinking, well, where's that put you? You think about it in the scheme of things and think, I'm just getting started, I feel like. The Lord said, it doesn't really matter whether you live in an old house or a new house. He will repair what needs to be repaired, because we've had old houses, we've had new houses. We've had equal amount repairs on new houses as well as old houses. God's in the repairing business. It says he'll renew. Well, I'll read this scripture. This is Isaiah. So many people, they rely on their youth. I was thinking about Moses this morning. I said, Lord, Moses, it says in Acts 7 that he was full of might and power. Well, he went to the backside of the desert, and God called him out at 80, and he was full of might and power at 40. He wanted to take a man. He was ready to deliver him, and the Lord said no. So what happened? He went on the backside of the desert for 40 years, and then God said, okay, it's time. It's time for you to start stepping up and going out. And he said, no, I can't even talk. He had all the might, all his youth, and everything gone. All of it. But God did it on purpose. If you're full of your youth and you're full of your whatever, you know, might and power, then God's not going to get the glory, is he? So you need to get this old age thinking out of your body. An old age. I know Satan will use your age against you to keep you on focus. Young people have symptoms and things too, obstacles and things that they deal with. In each stage in life, there are always going to be those things that we will have to stand for, whether we're 120 or 20. Obstacles to overcome, it's all the devil. But through salvation, God equaled the playing field. He said the valleys would be level. That's the thing about it. When he comes, his new heaven and earth is not going to have any valleys or mountains. It's going to be a level field. In his kingdom, it says a child would die at 100. I mean, we don't have any excuses today. I don't care how old we are or how young we are. God has made a way, and he will continue to make a way for us to be strong and do what he's called us to do. So we need just to put age, well, Lord, I'm getting older. We need to put that kind of thinking out of our minds. Because as far as God is concerned, well, I'll renew something if it needs to be renewed. Look at Sarah. All the modern medicine and all the stuff that they've got, the might of men, and they can't have a woman bear a baby at 90. Or a 100-year-old father a baby at 100, you know. So with God, it says nothing is impossible. And with with God, all things are possible. So the only thing that limits us is ourself. That's why salvation is about renewing the mind. It's about a mindset change. Salvation is not about telling people you're going to hell and you better get saved and all of this stuff. It's about saying change your mind. Change your mind. Don't let this world, don't be conformed to this world. Don't let this world convince you of its narrative. Just Sunday afternoon is, I watch Hallmark a lot. You talk about geriatric commercials. If you think that that is there to do any good for anybody, it's a death sentence is what it is. It's to try to get into old age thinking and old age ways, doing old age things. The Lord would have us be like youth. Let me read Isaiah 40. He gives power to the faint and weary. To him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall feebly stumble and fall exhausted. What?
You didn't say what verse.
I'm sorry. Isaiah 40. I need some down a degree, if you would, please. This is Isaiah 40, 29. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, okay. 676. What about just six? He gives power to the faint and weary, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall feebly stumble and fall exhausted. But those who wait for the Lord shall change and renew their strength and power. How do you think the renewing of the strength comes in the power? Renewing the mind. 3 John 2. Shall change, renew their strength and power. They shall lift up their wings and mount up as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint or become tired. I remember hearing Billy Brim say something. She was on with Gloria Copeland one day, and she said, and she's, I guess Billy's close to 80, so she said, one thing you learn about, she said, that she doesn't get sick. She does really well. And she said, one thing you learn is you never say, I'm tired. Never. That has to do with your words. Words establish things. You get into that, well, this, I can't, I, you know, I'm, you know the spiel, the drill. But it doesn't make any difference if you're a youth today or you're middle-aged or you're looking at seniorhood. Doesn't matter. The Lord is there to accommodate you till you go to be with Him. He expects you to be upright and strong and doing His call till your very last day. I believe it. We're not made to retire and expire. That's what old folks' home are designed to do. It's a death sentence. It's to get you there, and then they get you on their drugs and whatever, and you don't care if you live or die. And you pass on like a lot of them are like vegetables. So it's a system. It's Satan's system. It's not God's way. Well, the subject this morning is going to be, are you well? Question mark. Are you well? Now I want to turn over to 2 Kings. Are you well? Second Kings 4. All right, we're going to read the verse 1. Now the wife of the son of the prophets cried to Elisha, your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord. But the creditor has come to take my two sons to be his slaves. And Elisha said to her, what shall I do for you? Tell me, what have you in the house? And she said, your handmaid has nothing in the house except a jar of oil. Then he said, go around and borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels and not a few. And when you come in, shut the door upon you and your sons. Then pour out into all those vessels, setting aside each one when it is full. So she went from him and shut the door upon herself and her sons, who brought her the vessels as she poured the oil. When the vessels were all full, she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he said to her, there is not a one left. Then the oil stopped multiplying. Then she came and told the man of God. He said, go sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons live on the rest. Was she well? She heard the word of the Lord and responded. And what seemed to be dire circumstances ended up well. She actually was well. It was in her power to be well. See, we have a choice today. We're going to hang with which group? Grippy, complainy, I don't feel good, man. Or we can decide, nothing moves me. I'm not moved by what I see, feel. Yeah. Have we not a choice today? Verse 8, one day Elisha went on to Shunem, where a rich and influential woman lived, who insisted on his eating a meal. Afterward, whenever he passed by, he stopped there for a meal. She said to her husband, behold now, I perceive that this is a holy man of God who passes by continually. Let us make a small chamber on the housetop and put there for him a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. Then whenever he comes to us, he can go up inside, outside the stairs and rest here. One day he came and turned to the chamber and lay there, and he said to Gehazi's servant, call the Shunammite. When he had called her, she stood before him. And he said to Gehazi, say now to her, you have been most painstakingly and reverently concerned for us. What is to be done for you? Would you like to be spoken for to the king or to the commander of the army? She answered, I dwell among my own people. They are sufficient. Later Elisha said, what then is to be done for her? Gehazi answered, she has no child and her husband is old. He said, call her. Gehazi called her and she stood in the doorway. And Elisha said, at this season, when the time comes round, you shall embrace a son. She said, no, my lord, you man of God, do not lie to your handmaid. But the woman conceived and bore a son at that season, the following year. As Elisha had said to her, when the child had grown, he went out one day to his father with the reapers. But he said to his father, my head, my head. The man said to his servant, carry him to his mother. When he was brought to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. And she called to her husband and said, send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys that I may go quickly to the man of God and come back again. And he said, why go to him today? It is neither the new moon nor the Sabbath. And she said, it will be all right. Now, King James says all is well. But same difference. It'll be all right. Then she saddled the donkey and said to her servant, ride fast, do not slacken your pace for me unless I tell you. So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. When the man of God saw her afar off, he said to Gehazi, her servant, behold, yonder is the Shunammite. Run to meet her and say, is it well with you? Well with your husband? Well with your child? And she answered, it is well. When she came to the mountain to the man of God, she clung to his feet. Gehazi came to thrust her away, but the man of God said, let her alone. For her soul is bitter and vexed within her, and the Lord had hid it from me and has not told me. Then she said, did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me? Then he said to Gehazi, gird up your loins and take my staff in your hand and go lay my staff on the face of the child. If you meet any man, do not salute him. If he salutes you, do not answer him. The mother of the child said, as the Lord lives, as my soul lives, I will not leave you. And he rose and followed her. She was persistent. Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff on the child's face, but the boy neither spoke nor heard. So he went back to meet Elisha and said to him, the child has not awakened. When Elisha arrived in the house, the child was dead and laid upon his bed. So he went in, shut the door on the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. And he went up and lay on the child, put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, and his hands on his hands. And as he stretched himself on him and embraced him, the child's flesh became warm. Then he returned and walked in the house to and fro and went up again and stretched himself upon him. And the child sneezed seven times and then opened his eyes. Then Elisha called the Gehazi and said, call the Shunammite. So he called her, and when she came, he said, take up your son. She came and fell at his feet, bound herself to the ground. Then she took up her son and went out. So this Shunammite, she had a decision to make. Would it be well? Would it be well? If we go by what God's word says, then we'd never say anything to the contrary. And I believe this is where God is getting us to. No matter where you are in life, no matter how you feel today, no matter what circumstances dictate you about what you see, you can choose that it is well or it is not. What if she had had a breakdown? Her child would have still been dead. But she chose to say, no, it'll be all right. How she knew this, I don't know. Maybe she remembered Abraham. But she was a Shunammite. She wasn't even a Jew. 3 John 2. Beloved, I wish you above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thou so prospers. And I've been saying this for a few weeks, and the Lord wants us to get a hold of this. How would you act if every circumstance in your life today that's diametric to what, or, you know, what you want, how would you act? How would you act? If you never had to think about money again, if you never had another pain in your body again, how would you act? Would you be dancing a jig and screaming and shouting and jumping? Well, you know what? We've already been told that that's the case. We really have. In God's word, He's already said, you know, by stripes you're healed. I became poor that you might be rich. And on the other side of that, living in this sense world, as long as there's a devil here, circumstances are not going to always just be rosy. Because we live in a natural system and it's under Satan, God of this world. Now we take our authority and take our ground, but with that comes warfare all the time. And if you've got the land, you're still doing warfare to keep the land. And the symptoms of things that come against us are simply lies. Because as far as His word is concerned, it's already done. It's well. Nothing missing, nothing broken. What does that entail? That's where we walk. But we walk it in the spirit realm. We may really never sense it on the outside. We may have things our entire life that we deal with. I can pretty well guarantee there's going to be. So quit thinking if it would just disappear, everything would be great. If it would change. He's trying to walk us through it, telling us how to walk with it, even bothering us, walking in resurrection life. That's what Paul got to. He didn't ever not have anything. I mean, they put him to death. They cut his head off. But he was looking forward to it. He talks about, I'm ready to go. I've done what I'm supposed to do. Coming to the fact that as a warrior, you will have warfare. This utopia that we'll never have anything bothering us is a sham and it's a lie. You're learning to walk through those things and they don't affect you. I used to think, you know, the big guys, the big faith guys, they never had anything go wrong with them. But I heard Brother Hagin, he didn't say it very often, but once in a while we got a glimpse into his real life. Not his confessed life that we heard that we thought it's perfect. There was one of his camp meetings that he indicated he had had his arm had been numb for 6 months. You know, the guy dealt with things, but he kept his mouth. He didn't let what he felt or what he saw. He guarded his thought life. So this thing that when I get there, I'll never have another nothing ever bothered by anything. I beg to differ with you. I don't believe that. I don't believe that's real. That's not reality in this life for us. Now we can let things not bother us and shake them off and go on to the next thing that we do, and God will help us. God's grace helps us through it. But if you are basing your happiness and whether you're well or not on what you're experiencing, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. I'm just being real here today because I'm realizing that he didn't deliver Paul of the messenger of Satan. He said, call on my grace. Well, you wouldn't need grace if it was just all gone, would you? Where would there be the need for the grace? You wouldn't need any help if it was all, you never had to deal with anything. It's good for us to be on the edge. This kind of stuff will keep you on the cutting edge of life and what God's doing in the earth. It's not comfortable, but I think you could probably ask any soldier today that did active duty that their tours were not comfortable, and what they did were not comfortable. It was dangerous. I'm sure there were many times they were in want, need. Paul talks about, I'm in want or not, but I'm content in whatever state I find myself in. There it is. There it is. But this pipe dream of thinking, well, I'll get to a place that nothing ever bothers me. Well, that place will be when we're in the New Jerusalem. Come on. The Lord's teaching us how to walk through these things and be strong, be mighty men. Why were they mighty men? Because they met challenges and they won. Not because everything was a rose garden. This is the true telltale sign of whether you are in mental ascent or faith. Actions speak louder than words. Oh, yes, I'm a faith person, and I'm just, yes, I believe I'm well. Yeah, that really, well, moping around like some old sad sack. Come on now. It's not faith. That's mental ascent. That's what it is. Acting like that. Like old pickle face. Yeah, that just really speaks a lot, doesn't it? We're the ones that are supposed to have it together. So when we go out, that doesn't mean we feel our best all the time. It doesn't mean that maybe we're not dealing with issues ourselves, but we are overcomers, you understand? We don't look at what is seen, but what's unseen. Actions speak louder than words. Don't tell me you're walking by faith and we're just about to have to scrape you off the sidewalk. We had this storm come through in our power outage Friday night. And as I was there, man, just kind of fear came against me about it. So I just started singing like Paul and Silas in the jail. Storm dissipated. See, God gives us stuff to overcome. You could side in with the storm if you want to, but what did Paul and Silas do in the jail? What did they do? Huh? Cat got your tongue. What did they do? All right. They sang praises. Their backs were beating and bleeding. And I know if you've ever looked into any of that, they didn't just slap their hand. And then they bent them over, painful, in those stocks. You talk about uncomfortable. And they're singing praises to God. Well, what would convince the jailer and all the people, all his whole family, to get born again? They didn't just say they walked by faith. They didn't make their confessions and just let be done with it. They actually acted out their faith. They acted like what they said and spoke, confessed, was true. even with backs beaten and bleeding, even with feet in stocks. James 2. I'm not trying to make light of any circumstance that you might be in that's painful and hard for you. But if all we ever do is focus on that, we will never do anything for God. That's just exactly what the devil wants you to do. He sends it. Why? What is his motive? His only motive down here was to kill, steal, and destroy, but he wants the gospel to get stopped. Why do you think they ended up in the jail? He wanted them dead. Why do you think the snake came out of the fire and on his hand? Satan wanted him dead. Satan wanted him to shut up. We're not moved by what we feel or what we see. We get our orders and we suck it up, soldier, and we go do what the master or the general wants us to do. If I waited till I felt like doing something, I'd never do anything. And that is the gospel truth and has been for a long time. But as far as my faith speaks, I feel great all the time and I refuse to settle for anything else. Anything that comes against me is a lie. And when you know something's a lie, it's a lot easier to deal with it when you know it's a flat-out lie. Now, the devil will try to convince you it's true, but all you have to do is look in the Word to see that it absolutely is a lie. And the more you can comply with that and speak that and quit giving in to the pity parties, then you'll start gaining some ground. You'll walk in that resurrection power that Paul talked about, even in the body. You'll walk like you're already resurrected, but you're still in a physical body. You're still dealing with the stupid devil and his antics and the world and all of that. But you're walking up here where Jesus walked. You think Jesus didn't have any problems? He got opposition everywhere he went. So did his disciples. And he said, just get ready. If they did it to me, they'll do it to you. All right, 2 James, James 2, 14. What is the use, profit, my brethren, for anyone to profess to have faith if he has no good works to show for it? Can such faith save his soul? If a brother or sister is poorly clad and lacks food for each day, and one of you says to him, goodbye, keep yourself warm and well fed, without giving him the necessities for the body, what good does that do? In other words, if we're just so into ourselves, we don't notice anybody else, how can we say, yeah, we're a person of faith? There's action. So also faith, if it does not have works, deeds and actions of obedience to back it up, by itself is destitute of power and operative deed. Don't tell me with your mouth that you're a faith person, but everything you do suggests otherwise. But someone will say to you then, you say you have faith and I have good works. Now show me your alleged faith apart from any good works if you can, and I by good works obedience will show you my faith. The woman, was that good works? I'd say so. God recognized those good works. She got her son raised from the dead. We take this to mean it means you got to do something good for somebody. Not necessarily. Good works to me is obeying God and obeying His Word and being standing in faith. That's a good work. You believe that God is one, you do well. So do the demons believe and shudder in terror and horror, such as make a man's hair stand on end and contract the surface of his skin. Are you willing to be shown proof, you foolish, unproductive, spiritually deficient fellow, that faith apart from good works is inactive, ineffective, and worthless? In the parable of the talents, the one that took his talent and buried it in the ground was the one the Lord said, you wicked, lazy servant. The rest of them took what they had and worked with what they had and gained. Whatever, wherever you are, gain. Don't lose, gain. Don't let the devil stop you anymore, back you in a hole, make you hole up in a corner. Get out there and kick his Don't you see? He's trying to stop you. That's the only thing you suffer today, is him trying to stop you. Was not our forefather Abraham shown to be justified, made acceptable to God by his works when he brought to the altar an offering his own son Isaac? You see that his faith was cooperating with his works, and his faith was completed and reached its supreme expression when he implemented it by good works. Good works is just obeying God and what his word says do. Well, it means I need to go give some beggar at church something. No. It may mean that. He may say do something. But you see what I'm saying? We're acting out our faith. These are those good works. And so the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed in, adhered to, trusted, and relied on God, and this was accounted to him as righteousness, as conformity to God's will and thought. Indeed, he was called God's friend. Do you know that you change allegiance when you do these kind of things, whenever you speak your faith, but you act like you're just unproductive. You just act like the world's falling apart. You're saying the right words, but it's mental assent. I'll tell you a story. This is Brother Hagin tells the story about a pastor that was a woman. He's ministering to a woman, I believe. If I get it wrong, it'll be okay. Anyway, this woman had cancer, and he was going to her house. He'll make sure I get her. He was going to her house every week and taking her a healing tape. And one day the Lord spoke to him. He said, I don't understand why she's not getting healed. She's not getting well. And one day the woman, he said, do you believe what these tapes? It was Brother Hagin's teaching tapes. Yeah, I believe it. He said, no, you don't. He said, you're giving mental assent to it. If he's really believed it, you'd be out of bed. And he said she looked at him like, you know, calf in a new gate. But she got up. And she, when her husband came home, she cleaned the whole house and was cooking up a storm. She was acting like she was well. You can believe in that bed that you're well. But until you put some action to it. Okay. Attitude determines altitude. This is so true. If you've got a good attitude, this is Proverbs 17:22, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. I mean, even in the natural world, you'll see these people like the Special Olympics, where you see these people that are hampered physically, and a lot of them are young. And they're out there trying with all their might, with all their strength, to do their very best in their very limited bodies. That's faith. That's how faith works. You are striving to the very edge of manifestation. In other words, your harvest may not have got the full corn in the ear, but you're moving towards it and acting like you're well as best as you can. Like Charles Capps and the poison oak. He believed, and so every time he went out there, he stripped it off his hand, he'd break out with it. Had to put the calamine lotion on it. And then he'd go back out there and do it again. He did that for about a year, and one day he stripped it off and he didn't suffer any breakouts. What was he doing? He was putting as much action to his faith as he possibly could. We need to be doing that. That's the goal all the time. Not giving in to the weakness, not giving in to what's coming against us, because it's the devil's trap to keep you unproductive. He wants you to bury your talent and never do anything. That's his goal. All right, moving into can do. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He's like Moses. He's not looking for you to have strength in yourself to do what he's called you to do. He let Moses get down to the point that he had no might left and couldn't even talk before he said, now I'm going to send you in to take him out. And I'm going to give you a rod, and I'm going to tell you just exactly what to do. Because it was God doing it through him. It wasn't his might. If he wanted to use him, his might, it would have been 40 years prior. Do you understand? Quit moaning about these symptoms and things. Quit moaning about it. Use it to your advantage. It is the devil trying to stop you from doing what God has for you to do. And some of it is God has you in a place to train you. Sheep that run off, you know what happens to sheep that run off? They get to stick closer to the shepherd than any of the other sheep. He'll confine you. He may put you in a separate pen so you don't run, because he's trying to teach you things, because he's got work for you to do. We've all got lots to do. Okay, faith always says I can. All right, Numbers 13. Is this helping anybody today? It's like in Ecclesiastes where it says, he who observes the wind will never sow. And it's the same, this is faith. You will never do anything if you're observing the circumstances, because the circumstances will never be favorable. Let me just tell you that. Because it says Satan comes to steal the word. Any endeavor that you start on, Satan is going to come to try to take it. Numbers 13. Just like me, I've had a busier week than usual. Felt like I didn't get enough downtime, and I feel like when that happens, it seems like I got more. It's God's grace. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about yielding and saying, okay, Lord, you see there's nothing hidden in your sight that's concerning me. There are no secrets, so you know me inwards and outwards, and you know what you want me to do, and I just call upon your grace, and it's going to be all right. All is well. He'll work with what you give him. You say, it ain't much, Lord, but it's all yours. He'll use it. Just look in the Bible at the old people and the least likely to succeed much that God used. They're all in the Faith Hall of Fame. All of them. So are you. We're going to get up. We're going to get to where our destination is, the New Jerusalem, and I believe we'll be in that Faith Hall of Fame. We'll find our name on that wall or in that scroll or whatever, the book. Okay, 13. The Lord said to Moses, send men to explore and scout out for yourselves the land of Canaan, which I give to the Israelites. For each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a leader or head among them. So Moses, by the command of the Lord, sent scouts from the wilderness of Paran, all of them men who were heads of the Israelites. So he sent out all the leaders of all the tribes. These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to explore. We didn't read those. 17. Moses sent them to scout out the land of Canaan and said to them, get up this way by the south and Negev, and go up into the hill country and see what the land is and whether the people who dwell there are strong or weak, few or many. And whether the land they live in is good or bad, and whether the cities they dwell in are camps or strongholds, and what the land is, whether it is fat or lean, whether there is timber on it or not, and be of good courage, and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and scouted through the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob to the entrance of Hamath. And they went up into the south, and Negev, and came to Hebron, and Ahiman, Shishi, and Talmi. Probably three tribes of the sons of Anak were there. Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt, and they came to the valley of Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two of them. They brought also some pomegranates and figs. Now think about it. These people had been eating manna for 40 years. Bet those grapes look really good. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol cluster because of the cluster which the Israelites cut down there. They returned from scouting out the land after 40 days, and they came to Moses and Aaron, to all the Israelite congregation in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh, and brought them word and showed them the land's fruit. They told Moses, we came to the land to which you sent us. Surely it flows with milk and honey. This is its fruit. But the people who dwell there are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, there we saw the sons of Anak. Amalek dwells in the land of the south of the Negev. The Hittite, the Jebusite, the Amorite dwell in the hill country, and the Canaanite dwells by the sea and along by the side of the Jordan. You think the Lord doesn't know that there's demons where you're going? He's told you you're well able. Just like he told them, you're well able. The ites are there, and they're going to be there. But you run the ites out. But his fellow scouts said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. So they brought the Israelites an evil report of the land which they had scouted out, saying, the land through which we went to spy out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the Nephilim, or giants, the sons of Anak, who come from the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. What defeated them? Their mindsets, what they thought about it. Was this like our walk of faith? I think it's a symbol, a parallel. That's like we have our own Canaan to conquer. That's the walk of faith. All the promises of God that are yes and amen. He said the land was already there. Canaan's not heaven. No, it's faith land. It's a place where we can retrieve, take back stolen goods, use our authority to receive. Okay, they be not able. 2 Timothy 1:7, God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but of what? Power, love, sound mind. In other words, we don't listen to the lies of the devil. Faith works by love. And he gives us the grace and power to go in and execute. When we step out in faith, his grace is on us. Greater is he that is in us than he that's in the world. And we all know 1 Samuel 17, David. All they did was run for the foxhole. When the giant came out and yelled, I'm going to die. They headed for the foxhole till a little faith boy showed up. He said, I'm well able. The Spirit of the Lord came upon me and I killed the lion and the bear. And this giant will be the same as them. He was battle ready. He had proved it. Has God ever let you down? No. You can spend hours and hours and hours making confessions and reading scriptures, but if you are not motivated to put action to it, then something's wrong. Locate yourself. Are you in the faith? Paul says you need to assess, am I really in the faith concerning this? Is there something I need to do? I reach those places in my own life, and I'll say, Lord, something's off here. Can you tell me what it is? And usually in a moment, he said, well, you're kind of not being sincere in an area, or you're letting fear come in this area, and you're not fully going ahead and doing what I told you to do. You're kind of cringing back a little bit. This is fear. It's not faith. See, the fear to try to keep you out. No matter what is coming against you, God has already said yes, so what are you waiting for? We need to act like we really believe. That's what faith is. You believe it in your heart, speak it out of your mouth. Isn't that it? There ain't anything else. Luke 8:55. This is the story of the little girl that was dead and Jesus raised up. But this last statement that he said to them is so powerful. 8:55. And her spirit returned from death, and she arose immediately. He directed that she should be given something to eat. What's so profound about that? He was telling them, treat her like she's well. You baby her, pamper her, she's going to relapse and die again. We have to be careful that we don't do that. Don't try to help somebody. If they're trying to stand in faith, don't coddle them. Help them build their faith. Encourage them in their faith. I remember Dodie Osteen when she had cancer, 3 weeks to live. And she spent night and day in the Word. And she said she'd have some days where she really struggled. And her kids had come up to her and she'd have something over there that needed to be moved. And she'd ask one of her kids to do it and say, "No, Mom, you're strong. You can do it." They wouldn't coddle her. It's a good thing, because she could have lapsed and died if they had accommodated her. You see that so much with kids. I know of a lady, we talked about it yesterday, that I prayed for. I know she was healed, and because her kids would not let her, she listened to her kids, and they talked her into dying, and she did. So we need to encourage others that are walking by faith. Encourage them to keep using their faith. Don't coddle them. Don't act like they're sick or whatever the situation is. Understand? Don't let them get that weakening. I think it was Oral Roberts or Richard Roberts, one of the two that had TB, and he'd get weak and lay across the bed. And the Lord said, "Don't give in to that weakness. That thing's trying to come back on you. Get up. Do something that you'd normally do." When you're a person of faith and you're speaking your faith, you need to act like it is A-okay. All is well. No one will ever know that anything's wrong with you. Instead, always, "What's wrong with them? You know, what's wrong with them?" Who wants that? Everybody's got that, and it ain't worked, never gonna work. But these people, where we went yesterday, a lot of people we know, a lot of them getting older, a lot of sadness. We were remarking on how the walk of faith, how it's kept us and blessed us. It's a choice. I may feel as rotten as they feel if I'm going by natural things. You understand what I'm saying? But I'll be danged. No way. God says I'm well. The best of my ability, I'm going to act it. There you go. There it is. All right. There is no fear in faith. "Well, you know, I better not. The last time I did that, you know. No, what? Training our mouths to not speak anything but the good report. Every time I do that, man, I feel so good. Instead of, "Last time I ate that, or last time I did that, and da 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 da." What are we doing? You can't serve two masters here. We're going to be some of those people that we've learned through the years to despise. Everything's always good and it's always a good report. You just want to go, "They just make me want to throw up." It's kind of like President Trump saying, you're going to say, "Mr. President, we can't win anymore. Please don't let us win anymore. We're just going to keep on winning and keep on winning." That's the way we ought to be with our faith. Our God is so good. I never felt better in my life. Saying what you want. God's put you here to call it. Come on now. He's put you here to call for what you want. And your actions have everything to do with it, according to James. It's not just you say it, but everything in you says just the opposite. Okay. Are you well or are you sick? Which is it? Reasoning. This is James 1:22. "But be doers of the word and not merely listeners to it, betraying yourselves." And it says in brackets, "into deception by reasoning contrary to the truth." So you're speaking one thing and your mind, you're reasoning back and forth, "I sure don't feel like it." Okay. Reason means to argue. It's an argument. Now you see, why 2 Corinthians 10 through 5 about the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to put down strongholds, casting down imaginations, every high thing. What is the high thing? Reasoning. What caused Eve's fall? Satan reasoned with her. Hath God said? Are you sure? Questioning her. Are you sure? Are you really sure? Is that what God said? Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? Well, I don't know. Am I sure? Before you know it, she ate it. It's called second guessing. He used that tactic to undermine God's word. You can do it to a person long enough and they'll finally start doubting. Well, I thought I was sure, but I don't know now. Genesis 3, hath God said, a merry heart, it'll lift you up. Well, I'm just battling. Well, in the war. In the war. I'm just battling today. No, you've already won the battle. There's no reason to battle. It says to stand your ground in Ephesians. When you've done all to stand, just keep on standing. And a lot of times it'll be that you just don't say anything. Because the devil's just baiting you, trying to get something out of you, get a rise out of you. Well, I've done it all these years. Let's see if we can get another one. I just imagine those imps sit back there and just laugh. Kind of like the Democrats this week. All right. Keep your mind set on what is above. This is Colossians 3. You can't be thinking about the answer, how good God is, how well you are, how rich you are, and be down. If you then, 3:1, if you then have been raised with Christ to a new life, thus sharing his resurrection from the dead, aim at and seek the rich eternal treasures that are above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds, keep them set on what is above, the higher things, not on the things that are on the earth. For as far as this world is concerned, you have died and your new real life is hidden with Christ in God. So we're to keep our minds set on the right things. That's what's going to help us overcome. We can't think about the problem or what we're experiencing and expect to sit there. We'll get knocked off our throne. That's the can-do. The only way you're going to truly enjoy your life is by getting your mind off of what is and look to what you know. What God says about you. It is actually what is real. What the devil has thought up about you is an alternate reality. And you can choose to go that way and live there, but that ain't the truth. And that's not what's real. It'll take the fear out of the equation for you. No weapon formed against you shall prosper. Okay, let's turn over to Acts 12. The Lord is all about rest. He wants us to rest. Go read in Hebrews about the rest, Hebrews 3 and 4. It's about, there's a complete Sabbath rest for the children of God. It says, verse 1 here, about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to afflict and oppress and torment some who belonged to the church assembly. He killed James, the brother of John, with a sword, and he saw that it was pleasing to the Jews. He proceeded further and arrested Peter also. This was during the days of unleavened bread, the Passover week. When he had seized Peter, he put him in prison and delivered him to 4 squads of soldiers, of 4 each to guard him. He's guarded by 16 soldiers here. Well, I think the reason why is because they had so many disappearances. Purposing after the Passover to bring forth to the people, so Peter was kept in prison, but fervent prayer for him was persistently made to God by the church. The very night before Herod was about to bring him forth, Peter was sleeping. You thought he'd been pacing back and forth, making confessions, and going through all this turmoil. It says he was asleep. Can you imagine? He's got, just get a picture of him, his arms, and he's probably standing up. So he's probably, his knees are probably buckled, and he's just hanging there, and he's sleeping. Fastened with two chains. Sounds like his arms. Or maybe it was his legs. I don't know. And the sentries before the door were guarding the prison, and suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared. And a light shone in the place where he was, and the angel gently smote Peter on the side and awakened him, saying, "Get up quickly," and the chains fell off his hands. And the angel said to him, "Tighten your belt and bind on your sandals," and he did so. And he said to him, "Wrap your outer garment around you and follow me." And Peter went out, following him, and he was not conscious that what was apparently being done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. When they had passed through the first guard and the second guard, they came to the iron gate, which leads into the city of its own accord, swung open. And they went out, passed on through one street, and at once the angel left him. Peter realized, this really happened. You know, when we get to those places, a lot of people say, "Well, I wish I could see angels like Peter." Well, you want to be in jail? Let's think about the circumstances of the reason they saw these angels and things. I think, that's all right, Lord. I just do not see any of that. The angel stopped the mouths of the lions, but he had to go in the lion's den for that to happen. I'm thinking, All right, 14. Now at Lystra, a man sat who found it impossible to use his feet, for he was a cripple from birth. He never walked. He was listening to Paul as he talked, and Paul gazing intently at him and observing that he had faith to be healed, shouted to him, saying, "Stand erect on your feet," and he leaped up and walked. And the crowds, when they saw what Paul had done, lifted up their voices, shouting in the Laconian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." And they called Barnabas Zeus, and they called Paul, because he led the discourse, Hermes, god of speech. And the priest of Zeus, whose temple was at the entrance of the town, brought bulls and garlands to the city's gates and wanted to join the people in offering sacrifice. When the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of it, they tore their clothing and dashed out among the crowd, shouting, "Men, why are you doing this? We also are only human beings of nature like your own, so we bring you the good news, gospel, that you should turn away from these foolish and vain things to the living God who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and everything they contain. In generations past, he permitted all the nations to walk in their own ways, yet he did not neglect to leave some witness of himself, for he did you good and showed you kindness and gave you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with nourishment and happiness. Even in the light of these words, they with difficulty prevented the people from offering sacrifice to them. But some Jews arrived there from Antioch and Iconium, and having persuaded the people and won them over, they stoned Paul and afterward dragged him out of the town, thinking that he was dead. But the disciples formed a circle about him, and he got up and went back into the town, and on the morrow he went on with Barnabas and to Derbe. So here's Paul, stoned to death. Some say he was dead. I don't know if he was or not, but whether or not he was, what happened? He got up, went on, did his meetings, didn't stop him. You're well. All is well. Or are you just a victim of your feelings? Like Urkel. Feelings, nothing more than feelings. That's what it is. It's just nothing more than feelings. That's all the devil uses against us, is just feelings through our sense realm. The walk of faith is the walk of walking by what is not seen. What you know in the Word, not by what you see in this natural world. You can't trust that. Your attitude determines your altitude. If you got your mind right, you'll be on top. If you don't, see, that's where it starts. I don't know if people quite understand, because I taught it on the television program, 8 weeks of healing, and that people don't understand, James indicates that you really do, in 3 John 2, you really do get sick in your mind first. Yeah. The breakdown is in your soul. And then from there, it really depends on you. Okay, oh, if only these circumstances would change, I'll be happy. Really? Really? What has come against you is a storm, but we speak peace in the storm and it dissipates. You remember last week? Peace in the storm? To say Jesus never dealt with anything. Yes, he did. He calmed the storm on more than one occasion, walked on the water. People tried to stone him. He just walked through the crowd like they weren't even there. He didn't have any fear. Neither do you. You've not been given a spirit of fear. Fear comes from the outside. The lion roars. That's his fear tactic. God hadn't given you a spirit of fear. All right. Well, yeah, that's a good point. The Lord said to me, if it just left, what would you learn? Jesus said, whoa, they're going to come. All that live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. You will have to deal with things. We are water walking, storm rebuking sons of God. This is what we do. This is who we are. All is well. Did you believe it today? All is well. If you can't remember anything from today when you have to confront circumstances, just say, all is well. Or like the Amplified, it'll be all right.